This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning. I am Sally Spickard from San Diego.
And I'm Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 20th, episode 1957, brought to you by horselovers.com. Good morning, horse world.
Everybody up, rise and shine. It's a new day.
It's Wednesday, Wednesday, Wednesday.
Here we can go again.
Ooh, and away we go.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. Sally, thank you for coming on. I requested that you came on because I wanted to redeem myself. After the last time you were on, I was 100 million percent hungover after staying in the Sugarlands tour bus till like 2 a.m. That's not,
you know, but I think you did such a good job that day that, I mean, all is forgiven, but I'm happy to be here. It's
well,
a good excuse.
And now I have a super cold and I feel like crap.
So basically you just hate me.
You're
and don't want to be on the radio with me.
That's you're
cool.
A jinx and a curse. That's what I'm getting.
Duly noted. I've been told that a lot, so I should probably take a look at that and see what's going on.
By the way, I want to punch myself in the mouth for uttering the sentence, I was in the Sugarland tour bus till 2 a.m. Like, who says things like that? Ugh, that was gross. I'm sorry, everybody. It was true, but I still didn't need to utter that sentence out loud. That was terrible. So I was hungover last time. I'm a little sick this time. So it's good. It's good times. Yeah. Now, we're going to have to wrap this show early because, not early, but like on time. Because I have a very important mission this morning. It is day 3 of taking my son to Lego camp.
Oh my
Lego
gosh.
Lego camp.
What? Okay. What is involved in Lego camp? You've probably said this already, but I'm
really
unfamiliar.
No, I didn't really
I'm
know either.
I'm just picturing stepping on Legos if I'm a camp counselor and just hating my life.
Oh my God, I know. I can't even imagine teaching it. But it turns out that there was like a lot of children that signed up for it. There's 12 children. Can you guess the gender of 12 people doing Lego camp?
Yeah. I'm going to go with some boys in that
group.
Yeah.
Shockingly, there's
just
no
a few.
Girls. Yeah, there's no girls in Lego camp. And by the time I go to pick him up, there are Legos all over the floor, which just looks to me like a landmines that are hidden, you know. And so he's had an amazing time. Oh, my God. He like loves it.
That's
cool. He built an airport and a helicopter. And I don't know. I think that sounds like the worst torture ever.
Yeah,
number one,
I would have to agree.
And then number two, teaching it, like, my God, but
camp counselors, I don't know what genetic thing they've got going on that makes them want to do that for an entire, you know, because some camp counselors, like, you're gone for the whole summer with the same kids the whole summer, 3 months. Like, I don't know. I don't get it. Like, more power to camp counselors, because I mean, I did it at the barn, but that was like 5 hours a day, so I could go home. You know,
and that's the thing, too. I look at the Lego kid. His name is Joseph, the Lego camp counselor guy. And I walk in and Joseph is like, hey, good morning, everybody. Okay, have a seat. Grab your little Lego thing or whatever. Anyway, I look at him and I'm like, what a crazy person you must be to like sit with 12 like 5-year-olds and build Legos. And then I think he must think I'm a crazy person if he knew that I stood around with children out in the hot sun teaching horses all day. So I guess,
true.
I guess there's a trade-off. So
to each anyway, their own.
Crazy comes in many, many different forms.
God, isn't that the truth, Jennifer? Isn't that the truth? Yeah. Well said.
Words never spoken.
Well, while you're here, Jennifer, why don't you tell us what's coming up on today's show?
Well, coming up on today's horselovers.com Wednesday edition, it's Horse Health Day. And our favorite on-air vet, Dr. Madison Siemens, is here. And he's going to talk about rain rot because we've got that year round. And who doesn't love a good discussion about pus and scabs?
God. After that, breakfast with us, people.
What I like to wake up with.
Welcome. Enjoy enjoy those scrambled eggs. Next up, Elisa Wallace is going to stop by with an update.
Yeah, to make it real.
With an update on, I believe she's got some retired racehorse project horses getting ready and see how Johnny's doing. So we're going to catch up with her. And it's Wednesday. The Opium Equation, part two of chapter 30, is going to be here. And I'm sure it's going to be yet another cliffhanger.
It's getting real, y'all.
It's getting real. So I think it's time for one of these.
All right. So daily Winnie time. I would
come
like
up
to
with
give
one.
I did. I don't know. I think it's good, but it's probably just me. So one of my really good friends took her kid who just turned 7 last week to Disney World this weekend. Oh my gosh. So she's, you know, I feel like Disney has two windows, like 2 to 5 and then 25 and older. Cause I feel like when you turn into a millennial, then you go back to liking Disney. I don't know. I never hit that phase. So she's
so
been
she went
so
to
excited.
Disney World or
World,
Disney
whatever Land. One is in Florida.
Okay.
That's World, I think. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So she's at Disney World. Whatever. Kid is totally not into it.
Oh no.
I feel so bad. Cause they've gone to like, I'm not going to say how much they've spent, but like they took the mom, the husband, the kid, you know, like, so this is like a family vacay.
She spent the gross national product of a small country is what she spent.
Yes. And so, you know, the kid's really into Star Wars. I almost just said Starbucks, but, the kid's really into Star Wars and she totally messed up and got admission to the wrong park at first because the parks that they were going to go to don't even have Star Wars.
Oh, no.
So then they had the poor thing. They had to add on a day, add on a park, and God only knows. And then they took him, and he was like, I mean, it's cool. And so she's just so sad. I feel so bad for her. I mean, they've gone back, and, like, they've done some fun, you know, like, he's been kind of into it. But I think she's, like, it's, like, one of those expectation versus reality memes, you know?
Let me tell you something right now. If I spent all that money and I took my child somewhere, he damn well better appreciate it.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
Don't
That's
you
what
better
I said
fake
too.
It. Who the hell do you think you are? I'm doing all this for you, and here you are acting like a spoiled little brat. I bet you he's on his damn phone, too, all the time.
Well, he doesn't have one yet, so that's good. That's a positive. But I think it's just he's, like, one of those kids that is very, like, he's so smart that, like, you know how you can kind of tell some little white lies sometimes when they're younger and kind of, you know, he was never like that. And
no,
so you
I don't know that at
can't.
All.
Oh, okay. No. So then you can kind of relate to that then. But anyway, he was just very thoroughly unimpressed and I feel bad. But yeah, no, I mean, my kid would definitely be getting a little bit of a, I don't know, I can't say, but because I'm not a parent, but I just feel bad because you never really want it to go that way. So at least they're having a little bit of fun.
I'm not kidding you. Well, I took Lucas to Magic Kingdom and he was 4. And it was epic, monumentally epic, of course, at 4 years old. It's the most magical place on the planet. Just a damn boat ride to get from the parking lot to the like, to the entrance cool. was like amazing. It was awesome. But yeah, I think I would backhand a child if they were ungrateful.
Especially because it's like, I just can't, like, it's so expensive. I can't even... Yeah. But anyway, and like when I went, I don't remember how old I was when I went. I wasn't very old, but I just remember being scared. That's all I remember. So I was probably one of those kids, too.
It's funny you say that because, you know, you do the fast pass thing. And the only thing we could get, we went last minute when we were down visiting my mom. We went last minute and I got a fast pass. And the only thing I get a fast pass for was the Haunted Mansion.
Oh, God.
No. So, yeah. So we get in line and. Oh, let me just tell you, that did not go well for a 4-year-old. He was absolutely terrified. I mean, just terrified, but he wouldn't close his eyes. And, you know, he's sitting in between Chad and I, and then the ghost is on your lap at the end. And we walk out of the, you know, there's just like crowds filing out because there's so many people that can get through that line so quickly. Mm-hmm. And he very loudly announces, "Mom, I am never going to do that again. And next time we come here, I will not ride that ride." That was awful. Like, you're 4. You can't talk like that. You know, just every once in a while, his communication is like super honed in.
Where did that come from? I didn't even know you knew those words.
I know. I was like, that was awful. Is that what you just said? Oh my gosh. So yeah, terrifying. Okay, sorry. Next Daily Winnie. Blah, blah, blah. Sorry. Well, you guys, I have to tell you, Sally, I was talking on Monday, and you don't have to listen to my show, so I'll just give you like a quick what we talked about. I took Zeus, my Mustang, who is my novice Mustang.
Yep.
I took him to cross-country schooling on Saturday and Sunday, and we were just having some behavior problems. You know, he jumps. He's very brave. He jumps everything. But he was, as we went along, he got worse in the behavior where he would jump and land and like kick out. And then as we went further along, it was jump and land and like crow hop. And then at the end, it was jump and land and buck. And I had some equipment that was new on Saturday. So I was like, okay, Sunday, I'm just going to change back to my equipment to see if it's an equipment issue. Otherwise we have a problem. Mm-hmm. Sunday I jumped. I was like, I'm just going to go out on course and see what happens after I warmed him up, take him out on course. 1, 2, 3 were great. 4 crow hopping, 5, 6 full on bucking. So I pulled up and I stopped. So I had my vet out yesterday and we have a bit of a problem and I want to do some, we've been talking about it so much. And now it's a real life thing to me. My horse has 3 degrees of rotation in his coffin bone and has the beginning phases of laminitis. And I am really, Jen, really careful because I soak his hay. I mean, he is up half the day. I live in Phoenix, so I don't have amazing grass, but apparently my grass coming in the spring is too much. So I just made the purchase order for a muzzle because, and she's like, you're going to have to put him on a dry lot. I'm like, my dry lot is like 40 feet square.
Not very big. Yeah.
It's not big enough for him. He's a monster in the, he opens things, he breaks things, he flips over his water, but everything in his stall is tied down. He can't have a feed bucket because he rips it off the wall. And this is just on a normal day, much less without turnout. So I got the muzzle. She's like, you have to stop the grass. And
Zeus!
I know. I'm so disappointed. Now, from what I understand, 0 to 5 degrees rotation. And we took x-rays and everything. Oh, my God. I cannot even describe the vet bill I had yesterday between vaccines, teeth float, $600, vaccines, teeth floating, x-rays, like the whole thing. I was like, oh, God. Don't tell. Oh, God. I hope Chad's not listening.
I'll do. Do I need to do like a bake sale for you or something? I will.
Yes, please send it over. God, I hope Chad.
Sugar-free bake sale, please.
Yes.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah. I got the vegan, gluten-free, all that. We got everybody. It's cool.
Perfect. Well, apparently 0 to 5 degrees is kind of the beginning of it, and 0 to 5 degree rotation, you don't have to change the horse's job. You know, you don't have to change your lifestyle. I can keep riding him. You know, obviously we'll give him a couple days off. I've ordered aspirin and I'm doing ever going to throw the kitchen sink at him to get everything, change the shoeing, basically do everything possible for a horse that is starting to have the beginning phases of laminitis because he is an insulin resistant type horse. Right. So basically has diabetes and because he's just programmed to be fat. I mean, he's a Mustang. They are supposed to travel 40 miles a day and graze on with tumbleweed, and here he is like getting an alfalfa mix with orchard grass and concentrate. Not that I feed him a lot of food, but he still has to eat, so we're changing everything. We're doing everything, but 0 to 5 degrees is something we don't have to super worry about. She did say I do have to scratch from the competition in a couple weeks, which sucks. So no Coconino summer horse trials for us. And after that, it's not going to change his job. But if it gets any worse, then I've got a horse that's never going to jump ever again. And he's so likes it and so talented at it. And he's so annoying when he's not working.
Right.
So we're going to go back to the aqua pacer for the summer and swim a bunch and get stuff done. And anyway, so anybody that has had that, please feel free to reach out to me and give me some things, to cure stall boredom. That's a big one. Not that he's going to have to be in the stall, but usually he constantly 100% of the time has access to the pasture in a stall.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to have a muzzle. I'm going to have a board horse. I'm going to have, and he's such a pain in the butt to keep. You know, he escapes all the time. He undoes, at least he won't be able to undo clips and undo the stall.
Yeah, this is true.
This is a positive. See, I'm being positive. So, Sally, do you have any experience with any
I do have some experience with stall rust. I did have a little bit of a baby dragon situation when with my old horse when he had a bit of a soft tissue injury. And he was relatively good, and I couldn't afford the cost of, you know, having, you know, anything on hand to kind of keep him down when I did have to walk him or anything like that. But he did really well with just like a ball in his stall with like a really complicated way of getting treats out. You know, and that kept him. But, you know, that I mean, he was on stall rust for like maybe 2 weeks. So that obviously isn't a huge, you know, to him, obviously, it was like 5 years. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I don't know how well it would have worked had I had to go longer and longer. So, yeah, I unfortunately, knock wood, I haven't really been, I've been fortunate enough not to have to deal too much with it. But, yeah, I mean, I do know that stall rust is something that is, or just confinement in general, I guess, has always been something that we've tried to figure out good ways of handling. And it's always hard because especially with your horse, you know, or horses that like to have a job, it's like, you know, my second horse is like perfectly happy on stall rust. He's like, oh, I'm retired. This is cool.
Oh, you know? My gosh. So yeah. Some easier. Of them were like, cool. Let's go hang out in the bedding. This one's like, he can't even have bedding because he eats it. You know, the biggest nightmare to keep.
Yeah.
Like, when I go to California out to Monty's place, you know, Chad is like, you have to drive and you have to take Zeus because I cannot keep him here. So he's like such a frustrating horse. He'll, if you don't tie down his water bucket, you have his tied down, he knocks over his neighbors. Because we use those giant muck tubs because you'd be filling water buckets 47 times a day here, you know, because it's so hot. So we have to keep these big muck tubs. He dumps everybody's, which of course then puts 40 gallons of water into a stall. You know, so bedding is out of the question. I mean, it's like the worst management nightmare.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Anybody want
to
reach
out?
Give me
that's going to happen to you.
Yeah, of course. Some ideas on how to keep horses not from being so bored in a stall to give me an idea of really good. I ordered a muzzle, a breathe easy type muzzle with like big nostril holes. So we'll see how that works. Yeah. You know what? We'll bring Dr. Siemens on here because Dr. Siemens has a lot of information and he's going to talk to us a little bit about rain rot. But Dr. Siemens, good morning. First of all, how are you?
Good morning. It's so good to talk to you folks this morning. You always brighten up my day. I so enjoy this time with you.
I think you're a glutton for punishment. You must be.
I don't think I've talked to you yet either. So
I've been married
yet.
A long time, so I'm used to it.
Well, that's Dr. Siemens, you kind of came on last minute, and we do appreciate it. I know you were just on recently, but I was telling everybody that I have a Mustang that just was diagnosed with 3 degrees of rotation and his little first phases of laminitis. So any advice you have for me?
Oh, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. That's one of my most unfavorite diseases, and it's one of the things that I think we find as equine veterinarians, one of our most challenging types of pathology involves laminitis and changes in the foot because of that pathology of the sensitive tissue of the lamina. So laminitis and founder have been used interchangeably, but not correctly so. Laminitis is the inflammatory disease, but founder is when the bone is shifted into an abnormal position because of the inflammation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got two problems. You've got a laminitic horse, but also the pathology is to the extent that now the bone is shifting a little bit. And those things are really tough to manage. And there's half a dozen ways of directing these treatments for these horses. And, you know, bottom line is what works is what works. And sometimes we'll do one thing and they'll turn them right around. And sometimes we'll do half a dozen things over the course of a year and still not get it right. So I feel for you.
Thank you. This is really uplifting. I appreciate it. You're like, wow, this is hard.
Well,
you're screwed.
I'm sorry. You know, I told my wife, if you want to know if that dress makes you look fat, don't ask me.
Because I'm going to tell you the truth.
Well, it was really interesting. Bill Moyers was the head of the vet school at Texas A&M for a long time, and he wrote a paper, golly, probably 30 years ago. He's probably one of the leaders in studying laminitis, and one of the things that he said I thought was very, very telling. He said, anybody that would suggest that treatment or shoeing for a given case of laminitis would have had a different outcome, had a different treatment plan been instituted, is probably guilty of malpractice. Because this is a great big body of pathology there, and some of the things that are going on at the cellular level we haven't even begun yet to understand. So it's just an amazing and very frustrating disease. And I've seen some cases where you just go, well, this shouldn't be too bad, and 10 months later we're still fighting the battle. And I've also seen some cases where, wow, this is no way, and that horse is sound for 10 years. So, yeah. It's just a tough deal. It's just good fairy, frequent radiographs. I mean, it can cost you a ton of money because we're x-raying that poor guy, but things can change on a daily basis. And just because he had an x-ray last year and he looked okay, things could have changed in the last 3 or 4 days.
Well, so, Dr. Siemens, this is what's really frustrating. I feel for you. Yeah, because he's a Mustang. And my God, that horse will not show pain. He will not show any. I mean, we are doing the hoof testers on the tip of his toe. And the only thing that I saw was a twitch of his lip. And that was how we knew there was pain, because he's like, nope. Yep. I mean, Sally, we have put a, I've gone to pick out his feet and just go to pick around the edge and popped an abscess. A huge abscess. And
oh my
I just
gosh. And he wasn't even lame.
And he wasn't even lame a step. And I had just gotten off of him. So it's a really tough case that way as well, because the only reason I knew something was wrong, Dr. Siemens, was he would jump and kind of crow hop a little bit after a fence.
Yeah.
And it just got worse.
Good thing you know him so well that you could pick up on that, though,
Well, yeah. I mean, he doesn't usually try to buck me off. So
right. Something is true.
Well, there's an very interesting video that you can get online, and the veterinarians in Auburn, and her first name is Deb. I can't remember the last name, to save my life, but you can go online and it's thehorse.com, and it's called Is the Hoof Smart? And it's about an hour presentation, and what she has presented there is a few case histories, and I've used this myself, where we actually stall the horse on pea gravel, barefooted on pea gravel, 12 hours a day for a year. And I have seen that do some miraculous things.
Wow.
Where we're not underneath them. We're not underneath those horses with the rasp for a year. I mean, it's the pea gravel that does that trimming. And because if we bed them deep enough in it, and I'm talking about, probably 8 or 10 inches of pea gravel, they're able to stand with their toes pointed downward. That takes the pressure off of the deep flexor tendon, which is what's pulling on that coffin bone that's damaged, or the lamina that's damaged, it's pulling on that coffin bone that makes it hurt. It's like putting a pair of pliers on your fingernail and tugging on it. It doesn't take a whole lot of tug to make it hurt pretty badly. Mm-hmm. And so those structures are analogous to that, except that we're not standing on our fingernail. The horse is.
Mm-hmm.
So this was proposed by a guy named Xenophon about 400 BC. So, it goes back a long time. And I have seen some dramatic changes in horses just standing them on pea gravel for 12 hours a day.
Well, I wrote that down. I'm going to go ahead and watch that video. And also, I would like to introduce you to Sally, who is filling in for Glenn. It's a bit of a girl estrogen type day, so you're going to fit right in.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
And I'll give you guys a little moment to talk about rain rot. Thank you so much for all of your advice. And I'm definitely going to look at that video. And I appreciate all of your encouraging words. Wow. So supportive.
Well,
does this dress make me look fat? Well, don't answer that.
It's good to know. It's a gift,
Well, switching tacks really quick, Dr. Siemens, rain rot is something that I think is a thing that we all struggle with throughout the year, depending on where you live. I think it can be worse, but I've been seeing some things about Listerine or mouthwash or something, I guess I'm obviously that's in it that could help with, clearing it up. Is that something that you've seen too? Or do you have any other like special hacks or tips for treating it?
Sure. This is a great segue because the hoof is actually specialized skin, modified skin. So we can move up into talking about the just general skin, as a part of this earlier discussion. And if you think about skin, and we'll get to rain rot in just a second, but let me just give you sort of an overview of what we're dealing with here. Skin is a fascinating structure. It is the largest organ in the body. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it, it's not just a big leather bag to keep all your parts from falling out. Okay, the skin does a lot of things. It is full of sensory information. It is full of immune types of function, and it does it just does a world of good. It's amazing when you think about hair. Okay, the hair is there for a reason, and there's a little slip of smooth muscle at the base of each hair that'll make it stand up when it's cold, and that traps the body of warm air next to the body. So this was the first horse blanket God invented. And the hair gets long when it needs to be an insulator, and it gets short when it doesn't need to be an insulator. It's perfect thermal regulatory mechanisms involve sweating, and then this standing of that piloerector muscle to keep that hair trapping a warm air around it for warmth. I mean, it's just an amazing structure. And sensory input, I mean, you think about it. A horse can feel a mosquito on his tail.
True.
And so I had a really great riding instructor years ago was commenting about the heaviness of my hands. And she pointed out that, look, a horse can feel a fly on its foot. You know, you think you got to pull, you know, with 20 pounds of pressure to get him to understand what you want. Nice. That's what started me moving towards having much, much lighter hands. And mm-hmm. now I can ride my horses with a hay string because of what she told me.
Yeah.
But when we think about rain rot, it tends to be a seasonal problem. We tend not to see rain rot very much in the summertime. We tend mm-hmm. to see it during the times when the horses have heavy coats because there's a bunch of dirt and debris that gets trapped in these heavy coats. And then that's a great place for bacteria to set up.
Yep.
So actually treating rain rot is relatively simple if we just start using some hygiene.
Yeah.
And so what I like to do is just, you know, clean him really good. And then lots of things will kill that bacteria, which it tends to be a bacteria that can spill into something called a dermatophyte, which gets a little more complicated. And that's where we're talking about actually a fungus, or we call it ringworm or sweet itch or mm-hmm. dirt itch or barn itch. There's lots of different terms for it. But if all we're talking about is just classical rain rot, what works best for me is, and you got to remember, we don't like to use high concentrations of real strong disinfectants on skin. That causes a lot of damage.
Burning and damage. So stuff. That's kind of uncomfortable. Yeah.
straight Listerine would probably not be my first choice. And so what I like to do for cases, if what you've got is classic rain rot, and you can diagnose that pretty easily because it tends to be on the top line, not underneath the horse.
Right.
Okay. And it can be kind of scurfy, typically not itchy. Okay. If that's what you got, then just clean it really good. And then I just use dilute Clorox. So one part Clorox to 15 parts water.
Okay.
And that is a real good shotgun all around disinfecting type of a product, and it won't hurt the horse.
Huh. That's interesting. Huh.
Well, I just knew that Dr. Siemens would come up with the bleach thing instead of some sort of like tea tree oil and peppermint, you know.
Bleach it, it's cool.
You put some flowers into a little thing, a little ceremony dance.
If you boil the water first before you dilute the Clorox, then you can feel like you're doing some good. You know, not really medical stuff. You know,
they make organic bleach. Is that a thing?
Yeah, right.
So you got to get organic bleach and organic water, and you know, you got to do it during the full of the moon.
Fresh rainwater.
Exactly. Well, what else would you use?
It's the hipster recipe for rain rot.
Oh, I love them. I love them.
But that spills us over into a lot of things when we start talking about using strong disinfectants. We need to be very, very cautious. When we think about the immune status or the immune function of the skin, it's pretty interesting when you think about it. You know, the whole world is covered with bacteria. You can't go to any place that doesn't have a pretty thick layer of bacteria on it. And in the horse's skin and our skin as well, it's a very interesting structure because it harbors a bunch of bacteria. This is normal, okay? And but there's good bacteria and there's bad bacteria. And so if you think about it, this this biome, okay, this area that's just literally full of life has a function and a reason. And so what the bacteria on the skin does is it keeps the bad bacteria from proliferating. So, for example, if you had nothing growing in your yard, if you didn't plant grass out there, what would grow? Weeds. And so if we put really strong disinfectants on skin, we wipe out all of the flora, and what comes back?
Yeah.
Weeds.
Yeah. No, so, that makes a lot of sense.
For example, when we get cut, okay, we have disrupted that layer of skin that keeps the bacteria out, and the bad bacteria have a place to start to proliferate. That's why we get infected. But there, I mean, technically the wound is infected the second it gets cut, not 2 days later. But we need to understand that using strong disinfectants will wipe out this biome and a lot of these good bacteria. So we need to be very, very careful about using this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so, it's a good point to bring up. People don't remember that. I think they think they see like disinfectant or, you know, bleach, or they see the word and they're like, oh, I'll just throw a bunch of that on there and we're good. So you can actually be doing a little bit more harm than good.
A lot more harm. And so we're talking about wound management. You know, we don't use strong disinfectants on wounds anymore. When I was in vet school, you know, back when the surface of the earth was still cooling, we used peroxide and iodine on everything. Mm. And now we know that's the worst thing you can do. And So if you got to use betadine, one of the tamed iodines, you got to cut it 1 to 100. I mean, literally 1 to 100. Same with chlorhexidine, You know, the blue stuff, Novosan. You have to be really, really careful with this stuff.
Well, when in doubt, use organic water and organic bleach. That always works.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr.
15, and then.
Sorry. Yeah, but it's interesting because I think it's easy to do the overkill, and I think that's good because I personally didn't really, that's something that I automatically go to is just disinfect as much as possible. So good to know.
And that's what you're going to learn from Dr. Siemens is that he's just real. And that's why I love you and I love having you on. And tell everybody, you know, Sally hasn't met you before. Tell her where she can find your book and what it's called.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, it's. My website is cornerstoneequine.com. There's only one E between cornerstone and equine. And just go to the shopping button and that'll spill you into some of my art and my book. And the book is called Never Trust a Sneaky Pony and Other Things They Did Not Teach Me in Veterinary School.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it took me 20 years to write this book. And it's basically it's practice anecdotes and funny things, but it's also the reason why we do certain things. And I just try to have a real practical approach to some of these things and try to steer people away from making some of the mistakes I've made. You know who James Herriot was, wrote All Creatures
Yes,
Great
I used
Small?
To I was just gonna say I used to read those books when I was younger and I was that's what you made me think of. So I'm definitely gonna have to buy it now.
he was an interesting character, and apparently the vet school he went to, all of his patients lived and all of his clients love him. I went to another veterinary school.
A real one.
Yeah, there's a different thing that happened to me, but we just had different paths, I guess. But anyway, it's a real fun read. I enjoyed writing it. Well, I got another comment on skin. You got a second?
Yeah, I'm sure.
When I was talking to your producer yesterday about skin, and I got to thinking about a case that I saw many years ago. It was very, very interesting. Show horse comes into the clinic and he's lost all his hair. I mean, this guy looks like one of those naked chihuahuas. I mean, he just looks horrible. Big, fat, beautiful, well-bred, you know, show type horse. And the problem was he just didn't have any hair, which is a problem for a show horse, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did every blood test known to man on this poor gelding. We did skin biopsies. We did everything except check this gelding for pregnancy. I could not figure out what in the world was wrong with this horse, you know. And so he'd been there for 3 or 4 days, and the gal comes and picks him up. Now, this is the middle of summer in Northern California. It's like 105 degrees. And so she comes to get the horse. She's not happy that we can't figure him out. So she's fixing to load him. She goes through discharge, pays her bill, and she's fixing to load him up. And she puts on one of those, what do they call those really skin tight blankets, sleazy blankets, those or something sleazies. Like that. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, she had show horses. I don't know nothing from, I don't, putting me on a show horse is like putting a tuxedo on a water buffalo, you know? So what we did was we were watching this gal putting this blanket. It's 105 degrees out here. She puts this first blanket on him, and that's bad enough. And then she puts this quilted, big, heavy, insulated blanket with a hood on this horse.
What?
Oh, my God.
He's a show horse. And so I told her, I said, well, here's the problem. you've actually sweated all of the hair off of this horse.
Oh, my gosh.
And she just looked at me and said, well, you obviously don't know much about a show horse. And I said, well, no, apparently I don't. So anyway.
Apparently I don't.
Wow. That was just one of those situations where sometimes just getting a more complete history will give you a little better idea of what's going on. But I think that was, like your term a while ago, Jamie, was overkill. I think that was a little bit overkill.
Oh, my gosh, poor horse. I would say. Please tell me that you got through to her and that she took the dang blankets off and the horse's hair grew back.
No, I can't. I wish I could tell you that. You know, it amazes me how people are just, they got it set in their mind. This is how it ought to be. And, you know, man, there's other ways of looking at it, but hey,
wow.
That's just how it is, I guess.
Well, yeah. I guess so. Hey, Dr. Siemens, thank you so much for coming on at cornerstoneequine1e.com. We appreciate you coming on and especially at the last minute. And hopefully we'll talk to you again real soon.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks again for visiting with me. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Right,
talk to you soon. Bye.
Okay, I'm going to go throw away all the sleazies I own.
Right? I don't think it's the sleazy. I think it's the sleazy pus plus the blanket.
Plus the 105 degree heat. Just a thought.
Let's take a bit look at the big picture here, people. Sleazies are fine, but
my biggest panic, I think, as a horse owner, you know, I clip my horses, a couple of them that work, because it gets cold here in the winter, but not, you know, not cold enough to where they don't sweat when you ride them. So when you have a horse with a big woolly coat and it the high, you know, gets up to 60, but the low is 32 or 35, right. You know, you have to clip them so you can work them during the day. So I clip my horses and then I blanket them at night because I just shaved off all their hair like an idiot. All of a sudden they're going to die because I've shaved off everything to keep them safe, you know? So anyway, my biggest fear, what wakes me up at 6:30 in the morning is, oh my God, they might be sweaty. Yeah. And it is the definite, you know, OCD kind of panic thing that makes me get up in the morning. And like at a horse show just this past weekend in Flagstaff, I had to put a sheet on Zeus because it is fairly cold. It's like 10,000 feet elevation up there. Mm-hmm. So it got, you know, where he has no hair now because it's summer here, it got down to like 38.
Yeah, it gets so chilly up there. I was surprised.
Yeah,
when I went there for the first time.
It's amazing. It was beautiful and perfect. Except for I had to blanket them. And then I'm at a hotel because I'm on my living quarters trailer anymore. And I'm like, oh my God, we got to get up. Get dressed. We got to go take the blankets off, you know. Such a freak.
That would be me. It's okay. I understand.
like my husband says, Sally, he goes, man, it must be hard to be you. like you have no idea. You have no idea.
You actually don't even know.
Yeah. Like he gets worried about certain things. And I'm like, babe, do you know that people on the planet Earth are using 500 million straws a day? 500 million straws a day. Let's think about that. Let's think of how much plastic that is. That's not even encompassing the water bottles. And my God, you walk into a Walmart and there's 9 million water bottles on the shelves and then people are consuming them. They're not recycling them. I was like, these are the things that are in my brain all the time.
Yep. At all times. Never takes a break.
So now we have paper straws and he's like, these are gross. I don't care what
just
you
get the metal ones that like unfold and they're all, you know, futuristic.
I looked at that. Do you know how much that is?
Oh, is it like shipping? $30 for one straw?
It's like $20-something and then they charge and it's tiny and they charge like $12 for shipping.
That's so stupid. I hate that. That's so like you see a good deal and it's like, oh, it's going to be $28.97 for, you know, 2 weeks shipping. Like, oh, thanks.
And it's a straw. Let's be honest. I cannot pay.
I'm going to lose it anyway.
$35 for a straw.
Well, that's
on a keychain. You know what? I'm just not going to use straws anymore. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, it's just another little like thing of mine. So anyway, we are going to talk to Alisa here in just a second. Alisa Wallace. Jennifer, I guess, is working on getting her on.
Yep. I'm going to get her on, and we have a little bit of a, we have a product review we need to listen to.
That's right.
Yeah. A little something, something from, Ovation and Horse Lovers. So let's have a listen.
And we'll come back with Alisa Wallace.
And it's product review time, my favorite part of the show, where I get to hang out with volunteer listeners who volunteer their hard-earned time to try out products they're not familiar with and then come on the show and tell us all about them and whether or not they loved them dearly, loved them mostly, or didn't love them at all. And to wait with me this evening is Kayla Mueller. Hello, Kayla.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. I've caught Kayla in her pickup truck where she is midway between unhitching the two-horse and hitching up the four-horse.
Yep, you caught me at a great time.
Do you ever have your truck completely unhitched from a horse trailer?
No, never. 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 But, you know, it has to have its job.
That's right. That's what it's there for. It's for doing that. So tell me all about these Ovation Ladies Aqua X full seat breeches.
So, first off, let's start by the color. I went and I was like, I'm going to go all out. We're going to get like the brightest color. So that's this aqua color.
You bought aqua breeches?
I picked aqua, yes. And they actually are quite flattering. They're not as, I kind of thought they were going to be a little obnoxious color wise, to be fair. But I figured if I was getting a pair of breeches, let's get something that I normally wouldn't pick out for myself, which would be black or navy or tan. And let's go a little wild. And they're actually pretty subdued in the aqua color. I mean, it's still an aqua color, but it's, I would be proud to ride in a clinic in them. Let's just put it that way.
Really?
So yeah, no, they actually, and it pairs well with different color shirts. And it can work into your color scheme, with a lot of different options. So
you stepping out.
I know. Right. And then the durability of them, I ride in them actually quite often. They've become part of my rotation. Now don't get me wrong. I'm a romps girl myself. I like to ride in the romps Serafinas. Because of their stretch and the Ovation, this brand of breeches from the Ovation line are actually very similar to the Serafina. So they have a pretty good stretch. It kind of feels more like wearing a yoga pant and less of wearing breeches. So I'm comfortable in them all day. The elastic band around the waist is super stretchy. So, cause I don't know, some breeches when you wear them all day, like I do, they tend to start to cut into your hips by like hour four.
Yeah.
Then, you know, hour six, you want to like unbutton them or take them off, put on a pair of jeans. And these don't do that. Mm-hmm. So, they're just super comfortable. The only thing that I would say is a little bit, maybe not desirable is the stitching on the, cause they're full seats. The stitching. So when I sit in like my jump saddle, I feel like they don't give on the full seat part as much. Like the material other than the full seat, super stretchy. And then it's just like right at the seams where the full seat starts. They just don't give quite as much. I don't know. But that's me being super duper picky because they're still really comfy.
Yeah, the princess and the pea. Yeah, we know, Kayla.
Exactly. Yeah, we
know. So fit wise, do you think they fit true? Do they fit big? Do they fit small?
They fit true to size because I'm a pretty confirmed size 26 and they fit just like all my other 26s.
And care wise, washer, dryer?
Well, with all of my breeches, so I only wash them and then I air dry them, so that they last a lot longer. And they held up, they get washed pretty regularly. Listeners don't be disgusted, but I usually wear them about two or three times before I, put them in the wash because I'm cheap like that. And they, you know,
well, most
have
of us,
to get my use
most
out
of us
them.
Do that because we never get around to doing the wash. It's not, it's not that we plan it that way. We just do it that way.
Exactly. Now if they do get super dirty, then they go straight into the wash. But, what's also really cool, and I don't know if this, because I didn't read the tag and maybe that's my fault. So the Aqua X part of their like name, when they get wet, the water actually beads up on the material. It's not waterproof, but they like the water stays in a bead for a little bit before it soaks in.
Huh, interesting.
So, yeah. So I don't know if the Aqua X has something to do with that. It'd be something interesting to look into. But I noticed like when I bathe the horse, when I'm wearing I'll have droplets on my breeches instead of just wet breeches.
Oh, well, there you go. Droplets, so, I guess, are good.
Yeah. And then eventually it gets wet, but not nearly as wet as my other breeches do.
Okay. Now, pockets or no pockets?
They have front pockets. They're just like little slide pockets. You don't notice them very much, but they do fit a phone. I have an iPhone, and I always ride with my phone on me because I normally ride by myself. So I just slide my phone in and it just fits comfortably in there. So it's pretty spacious. And the belt loops are fairly easy. They fit most belts.
Now on the bottom, do they have the grippy ankles, Velcro ankles? What do they got down there?
They have just this, soft elastic, material. So like, I don't know. It's like a Lycra.
Yeah. It's that super thin stuff so that your boots fit better.
Yeah. And so this is a little bit thicker than that, but that same idea. And, so they're super soft. They don't cause any irritation around the ankle. I find like some of the breeches when they have that little grippy, I always get because I sweat a lot
bones.
And it gives you like this like weird angry red line.
Yes.
Where it raises up a little bit.
Yep.
And these don't have that. So they're super comfortable to wear in your boots all day long.
There we go. Ovation Ladies Aqua X full seat breeches. They are available at horselovers.com. That's horselovers with a Z.com as we do this review. And they are available for $129.95 from sizes 26 through 34, regular and long, in assorted colors. And thank you very much, Kayla Mueller, for stopping by this evening and doing our product review.
Well, thank you very much. And thank you to Ovation and to Horse Lovers, because this is a great opportunity for everyone to get some cool stuff to review.
Fantastic. Well, we've got our next guest on the line, and she is a dear friend of the show. We would like to welcome Alisa Wallace. Good morning, Alisa.
Hello.
How are you?
Doing good. How are you guys?
We are great. We haven't talked in a while. I've got Sally here. Glenn is, I don't even know where Glenn is right now, but he has left it to all us women to take care of everything. So here we are. Now, I have been watching your Facebook. Okay, let me just start out. I'm not a complete stalker, but like, yes, you know.
It's okay. I am. I'm completely unashamed. Just accept it.
I've been following you, and you are very, very busy these days. How have you been?
Yeah, so it's been great. I've been busy and kind of, busy. Busy is a good word for it. The horses are doing great, and it's been, every year I try to keep things interesting. So whether it's the thoroughbred makeover or four-star or then trying to do the Mustangs, it's been pretty fun.
All of those things are what one person would strive for, one of those things in their entire life. And you're like doing all of them at the same time. So let's start with the thoroughbred makeover. I know you have a couple, not even just one, I think two that are going to be heading towards that makeover.
Yes. Yeah, so I have two really exciting horses, and they're owned by Michelle Chisholm, and the other is owned by Susan Day. And I've had them since December. And so they're the two very different horses. One's name is Sniper. His jockey club name's Reloaded. And then the other one is called Sharpie. And his jockey club name is Sharp Johnny. But I couldn't call him Johnny because I already have a Johnny. So the Sharpie name just kind of stuck. And so what's really cool is they're actually both related to Johnny. They're like cousins through Danzig. And they're both really talented horses. Sniper is a 5-year-old and Sharpie is a 7-year-old. And Sharpie is a war horse. He's raced 61 times. Wow. And then Sniper, I think, raced 18 times. So they were, you know, pretty good at the track. Not too shabby. But they're both, while they're very different, they're both been really great horses to bring along. So my 5-year-old Sniper, he's been competing at the novice level and he's been winning, which is great. And then Sharpie has moved up to the training level. And for me, it's really fun, with the green horses and the off the track horses, to kind of see the development into, like, I'm 6 months in now, and to see the different muscles that they need for being a sport horse versus when they're being a racehorse. It's been really fun to see the change. And, while there are frustrations with bringing along the green horses, ultimately being able to look back at how far I've come and that sense of progress that I'm addicted to. So,
yeah, well, now I'm going to stop you here. You said these guys, you've had them 6 months. They're retired racehorse project eligible, which means they basically raced right before you got them. So I'm pretty sure you just said you have one go on training level.
Yeah, that's insane. Right. That took me let me count. I think it took me like 14 years to get to training level.
What's your horse secret here? Well, every horse has a different timeline. So Sharpie is a little bit older, and so it's just been one of those things where he's progressed in his flat work. And he's also the type of horse where he actually does a little bit better with a bigger fence. So it's really just about listening to the horse. Like, I'm not going to try to move up a level if I don't think my horse is well prepared. So it's just making sure that I do my due diligence. And I've just been, you know, lucky that in the training progress, they've just kind of keep moving forward. And it's been, you know, really fun. Now, like if I went to move him up and he had some difficulties with that, then I would be like, okay, well, I need to move back down. But generally I really try to listen to the horses. And sometimes if you have one, they need to be a little bit kind of like having that really smart kid that needs to be in like AP class. Like it's kind of a little bit like that. Right. So you have to kind of keep things going, but it's just one of those things. Like he handled it. Like he did a beginner novice. And then I did a training level just because, he seemed to do better with a little bit. Yeah, exactly. Now show jumping is a bit his nemesis. as far as that, he's such a brave horse. Like these two horses are so brave. That he's just like, well, I mean, the jump's there. I might as well just, it's okay if we hit them and canter through it. So I've really had to make sure that I work on his technique and doing lots of grid work and pole work and just getting the ride abilities of both horses. So like I said, it's just they've both been really great horses to bring along.
So I have a question, because I having had off the track thoroughbreds with both, you know, war horses and horses that are just one or two races, what do you think the biggest difference is between training those two, or is it just different with every horse?
You know, I've had ones that have raced once or twice, and I think there's a reason why they race once or twice. I think I prefer the ones, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe I just got lucky with Sharpie is one of my first war horses that I've dealt with, but he's very workmanlike. He's a fun horse to ride every single day. And I think sometimes with the war horses, they have to have a work ethic in order, you know, to
mental maturity, I feel like, is more what they have sometimes.
Yeah. And for, him, he raced 61 times and he won $59,000. And he raced at Finger Lakes and in West Virginia. I can't remember the other one. So he worked, you know, he was one of those horses that brought home food on the plate for his trainers. Like,
yeah.
And I feel like those, sometimes they're just your gritty horses that want to try hard and work hard for you. Well, I feel like sometimes the ones that raced once or twice, either we're like balked at the work sometimes. Now, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't, you know, if a horse raced once or twice, like, it's fine. But my experience with mine have been, my ones that have raced once or twice have been little brats.
I love that.
Behavioral things I've had to work through, versus like the ones that have raced a little bit more. But then sometimes you have the ones that race more that kind of can't get the track out of the brain, you know?
So, yeah. That's always been my thing, is I feel like maybe they'd be like old habits die hard kind of, but I haven't heard too many people say that really. So I guess maybe that's not a thing. Like, again,
each horse is kind of different, but, I think if you can get, and especially like the trainers that take really good care of their horses. I mean, this, my guy raced 61 times and he vetted perfect. I mean,
yeah, that's crap. Awesome.
Like, and that's awesome. Another thing, right? That's, I bought a war horse, and that's another thing too. This horse had raced over 100 times, and
wow,
the reason they race that long is because they're so dang sound,
yeah,
and so tough.
Right.
And the only problem I had with him, at least, he was a very, very workmanlike horse, very fendi. I got him right when I was pregnant. So like,
oh.
I had a little bit of extra time off. And what I realized with him, and I had to call his former trainer, the trainer didn't live at the track. He lived down the street. So every morning he would put Edward on the trailer, drive to the track, run him, put him in the trailer and drive him home. Well, do you know what that does to the psyche of a horse that has to go to a horse show?
Every time you get on the trailer.
Holy cow. Oh, 2 years it took to be able to get to take him somewhere where he wasn't like, oh my God, I'm going to run.
We're going to run.
Yeah.
That was the biggest challenge with him, but you're right.
Old habits die hard right there.
Yeah, exactly. But the rest of like his life, he was fantastic, you know, and I took him up through novice before I sold him as a show jumper. And he's killing that. And I mean, so to have a life as racing over 100 times, and then to go be an event horse, and then to go be a show jumper. I mean, they're just
crazy.
Yeah. Thoroughbreds can do it all. Yeah. Just amazing. Mm-hmm. So, that being said, we wish you the best of luck with those two. My gosh, tell us about Johnny, how he's doing.
So Johnny looks fabulous. He came out of Kentucky looking great. It's another, you know, he's a thoroughbred, and I'm always just astonished at how well he looks. Like, every year he puts on more muscle, and, he's 16 this year. He turned 17 in November because he's Australian. So oftentimes I have to get after people because they're like, he's 17, like in the beginning of the year. And I'm like, no, he's not. He's still 16, guys. Come on. But he feels fabulous. Like, sometimes people will tell you, oh, he's 16, like, he's ancient. Or But then kind of, let's see, Kentucky was technically our sixth four-star, if you include badminton. So, you know, there does get a point to where you do start thinking about kind of where you are with your horse's career and kind of the backside of it, the retirement. And, but as of right now, I feel like he feels great. He looks great. We were thinking of Burley, maybe heading over there again, but with that comes a lot of work. Just thinking about it makes me tired, because it costs around, well, it's about $20,000 just to ship them over there and back.
Well, hey, I'm starting a bake sale for Jamie's vet bill, so I can do one for you too, Elisa. Yeah. We got it. It's cool.
There we go. Yeah. So the money part can be a little bit tough, but then it's also can be hard in the amount of time that you have to spend away from home because you have to travel over there. And then coming home, they have to go through quarantine. So it's fairly an intensive thing. So while I have that on the books, I kind of, that's plan A. I also have plan B, C, like, you know, different things to monitor how, what's best for my horse.
Right.
So, but he always has everybody shaking their heads because, you know, I got him mainly because he had recovered from a injury. And, you know, so the first Kentucky that we did was just, I thought that was like the end of the rainbow, right? I thought that was the end of the story, but it was really just the beginning. And now to look back and the fact that we've done like six four stars and he feels good enough to possibly consider, you know, going back to Burley or Kentucky next year. So,
I got to tell you, you are, because I was listening, because this is the first Rolex that I missed in forever. And I will, by the way, not do it again. Just so you know, I'm voting for you to go to Rolex. I will not miss another one. That was ridiculous.
You mean the Land Rover.
So Land Rover. So I will not miss another Land Rover. And I was so bummed to miss you, but I watched your rides online. And, you know, we were there when you did your first four star, when you did Rolex back then.
Yeah.
And so, I remember that. And here they are. The announcers called you a four star veteran. How amazing.
No,
that
was crazy. Oh my gosh. I heard that too. I was like, oh my gosh, that's weird.
I'm looking at your Rolex rookie profile that I wrote right now, and I'm just like, oh, this is so cute.
Yeah. Aww. Well, see, I also have a problem with crying when I talk about that horse. So I said, okay, from now on, I need to work on my interviews on not crying. But
no.
No, I mean, the four-star horses are really, really incredible in the amount of heart that they have. And this one was pretty emotional, especially after kind of we didn't have a very successful badminton. And that was due to we had that issue at the last fence because we had gotten tired. And what actually ended up happening was that I found out he was magnesium deficient, which that had caused his heart to get stressed. And so now, while that was a really hard experience, and I try to always do best by my horse, we went back to the drawing board, and we have the best cardiologist and everything. And so Johnny now, it's so crazy how things happen. It's like, not only do I make sure that we have the vet to check his legs and all that stuff, we have a team of people, then I have the cardiologist to make sure he's in tip-top shape, and we do echocardiograms and monitor him for 24 hours. But he is the type of horse that he uses a lot of mag, and I didn't realize how important magnesium was, just because people don't really talk about it. So I have to always check his magnesium levels, because especially when it's hot like this, the horses sweat a lot and they use it.
It's amazing to hear you talk about this, you know, this far down the road. When I watched the competition with Oliver Townend beating the absolute S out of his horse going around, and I was like, all I could do was think of how much crap you had to deal with for something that was just so much less, you know, violent and yours was so much less irresponsible than Oliver Townend was going around. And I don't mean to badmouth that situation, but I do feel like you dealt with an unfair amount of crap regarding that. And if people now they're knowing and hearing what you've done post, post badminton, just incredible. And I do respect you. And I do think that after hearing this last badminton with Oliver Townend beating the crap out of his horse all the way through the course, I think you were somewhat, you know, not justified, you know, I just think that your infraction wasn't that big of a deal compared to what you've done since and what I've seen since then.
Sometimes it's hard as a competitor. You know, we have to wear two hats. So you have the competitor hat and then you have the horseman part. And you know, you want to be competitive and you kind of, you can get a little bit of tunnel vision sometimes. You know, you think you're just riding hard and you know, like when I was at badminton, like it's so funny to think back. Like when I felt him get tired, I stopped looking at my watch because I didn't care about the time. I was just care. I was so like focused on his breathing and trying to make sure. And then in hindsight, like if I would have known that I was so slow, like I was like, what the heck? I would have, you know, I was like almost a minute and a half, 2 minutes over. Like, yeah, I would have pulled up. Like hindsight, I absolutely would have pulled up. But again, sometimes it's those learning experiences where you have to take yourself and have that third eye, and especially with how visible our sport is, and not only that, but just to listen to our horses and of course all that, but to really step back and like be like, okay, what is this? How are they feeling? How does this look like? Because you don't kind of realize sometimes when that's happening, like, oh wow, my horse did look really leggy, like early on, and you know, it was a very tough experience, but I mean, it happens, and not that it happens, but like learning experiences happen.
Right.
And that, you know, it, everybody has an opinion.
And so, you know what, Elisa, like the thing that I've always been the biggest proponent of is, you know, when something like that happens, the fact of the matter is it happened. And people are going to talk about it and they're going to have their own opinions. But the fact that you are willing to say like, yeah, I had an issue, this is what happened, it's a lot more than what a lot of people are willing to do. And I get that, you know, you have a lot of people that are, that you have to keep kind of happy. I know you have owners and sponsors and all that sort of thing, but, you know, that's the most admirable quality, I think, is the ability to say, to be able to not brush it under the rug and be like, oh, that did, or downplay or anything like that, you know. And I have so much respect for people like you, because we're here sitting here talking about it a couple of years later. And, you know, obviously, I mean, I was there at the finish line taking a selfie with my dog, as you finished. And I mean, I can't even tell you how, like, I don't even know you that well. And I was emotional watching Johnny pull up because he just looks so good. And I mean, you should be so proud of that. So, you know, I think that's the biggest thing here is that, you know.
And that's what, like, for me, Kentucky, like, I went out there going, yeah, he feels great, we're going to go for the time. But then it was, like, always a little bit in my head. So when I was coming to the last fence, kind of the last couple of combinations, and I just like he knows when I like that, and he just motor on forward, and I was like, well holy crap, I still like I just started.
Yeah.
I was down the clock, but I was like, so like I couldn't breathe. I was so relieved.
Oh yeah. I'm sure. I can only imagine what the emotions that you were feeling.
don't go to Europe, save that dang money and let's go to Rolex again together. And it's going to be amazing. So Land I'm not going to hear Land Rover. Dang it. I'm really usually pretty good about that. Sorry. Land Rover. Let's go to Land Rover. Okay. I know. I'm sorry.
But yeah, I mean, this Kentucky was super special for me, just in again, how it's kind of like our redemption ride.
Yeah.
And he came out of it with flying colors, and yeah, I had him check the cardiologist. Everything looks great. And I'm really thankful to my, all my syndicate owners and my sponsors. Yeah, everyone, it's so funny because everybody's like, oh, the pressure must be really hard, but not when you have such amazing people that even when you screw up, they're there for you. And that's what I'm super thankful for, that I have the amazing support that I have. And when stuff happened at badminton, I realized Johnny had a magnesium deficiency. And I had been given this supplement to try, which was called the Hypona MagVet. And I called up and talked to Sabrina, and she was really, really supportive. And because I had like all this information of the test, because I didn't care what it took to find kind of what would work. And Johnny, being Johnny, he's a princess. he ate it. So. He lives on that stuff, and I couldn't be happier. And not only that, but then I put my other horses on it. And it's really helped the muscle development. Like, again, it really just opened my eyes. It's just amazing. Kind of, I think sometimes so many people are worried about failure. And for me, like, you know, in talking about the past and talking about badminton, like the thing I'm most upset about is I failed my horse. Like that's whenever I go out on course, that's like my biggest fear. It's not like failing. It's like failing my horse. So, and then you have all the other pressures, of course, but that's kind of like the biggest thing. And
that's what separates you from the Oliver Townends, who probably don't have that thought. It's the grand slam, you know, and here it is. That's why I love you. That's why when you cross the finish line and your daddy hugs you, all of us cry, because you did it, because you're a real person and you're a real human and you're a great horsewoman. And I'm proud to know you, and I'm proud of you and Johnny. And I just think the world of you guys, and I wish you the best, and come to Land Rover. Come on.
Well, yeah, that's definitely on the schedule. He loves Kentucky, so.
Perfect.
Hopefully next year he'll be, you know, again, it's like every time we just have to check to make sure he's still checking all the boxes and feeling mm-hmm. good. So, that's definitely one of the big goals for him.
Well, he wouldn't be going this long if you weren't taking such good care of him. So congratulations. Where can people find you? You do the coolest vlogs, and you're always online. You have a great online presence.
I think you're the only person on YouTube that I subscribe to. So that's good.
Me too.
Thanks. Yeah. Speaking of which, I have to do a vlog this week. But I'm on YouTube under Wallace Eventing. And as well on Facebook, I think it's Elisa Wallace Eventing. And then of course, my website is www.wallaceeventing.com. So again, I try to make the vlogs kind of information all in following the journey of the horses, because I think their stories are really important. And, you know, having the triumphs and as well as the failures, kind of what life's about, I guess.
I always say
better myself.
You don't learn by being perfect. You learn from making mistakes. And I'm really, really happy you came on to talk to us about everything. Good luck. And we will talk to you soon, Elisa. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Bye. If you don't love her more after hearing that, you didn't hear the whole thing. Oh my gosh.
I love her. And I love her dog. Her dog is my favorite.
Pocket. Yeah,
Pocket is awesome.
We're seriously all stalkers, okay? No, we're not stalkers anymore. We're like, you know, friends.
No, I literally stood at the finish line in Kentucky and I held my phone up and I took a slow-mo video, like a selfie video, and I took a screenshot, and it was me and my dog, because I have a little chihuahua too, and they're like, it's like Pocket's little boyfriend. And so that was like my ultimate stalker moment. I posted it on Facebook. It's cool. I don't care. I'm out.
Let's post it on the Horses in the Morning Facebook page right now. So anyway, we've got one ad and then we're going to go to the book, and then I'm going to Lego camp. What?
Woohoo!
Drop off, baby.
Cashel Company is your proud source for English tack, equipment, and accessories, and they have been for a long time. From cushion pads to saddlebags to fit your English saddle, Cashel Company has what you need. Their full line of accessories, such as the rolling crew bag, hay bale bag, and fan bag, help make chores easier and keep you organized at the barn or on the road. Of course, you can still find the same fly protection you have trusted for decades in standard designs or limited edition colors and patterns. You can find the Feather Flex girth in jump or dressage style and a wide range of tush cushions to fit your English saddle as well. If you need it, chances are Cashel Company has it. Be sure to check them out online at cashelcompany.com.
The Opium Equation is the first of the Kat Enright mystery series written by Lisa Wysocki. It features Kat Enright, a Tennessee Appaloosa horse trainer, Darcy Whitcomb, teenager with a trust fund, Bubba Henley, a budding juvenile delinquent, and John Gardner, a mysterious barn manager. And of course, there's Sally Blue. Thank you to the publisher Cool Titles for allowing us to read this book. If you want to read ahead, all four books in the series are available in stores and online everywhere or at lisawysocki.com.
Chapter 30, Part 2. It was a valid question, and unfortunately, it was one I wasn't sure there was an answer to. The way I came in was out. Chances were slim to none that someone would hear us banging around way down here. I hadn't seen any additional passages other than the one dead end I'd tried. I'd been watching closely, so I was pretty sure I hadn't missed anything. That left the pool of water, which was straight ahead. I thought hard. If I was right, the basement was directly under the den, which means the room behind the dresser was under the back porch. I'd zigzagged a few times to get where I was, but by my reckoning, the zigs and zags had all evened out and the tunnel was headed directly behind the house. And if you went far enough, what was directly behind Fairbanks? The Cumberland River. Then it dawned on me. This must be the tunnel Colonel Sam's slaves used to bring in the smuggled goods. This was why Adam had shown me the river from above. Deep down, he wanted me to find a way out. I wasn't sure how I felt about that, except I really hoped he wasn't waiting with a meat cleaver if I made it that far. Bubba, when you first got here, was the water this deep? No way, there weren't any water here. None? Dry as an old cob of corn. So when did you notice it was starting to get wet? I'm not sure. That prick Adam came down a couple times and gave me a sandwich and a jug of water. I was real hungry, but the stuff he gave me must have had drugs or something in it, because after I ate it, I got real sleepy. That chain was long enough so as I could move around some and sit down. I remember sitting against the wall, and I must have fell asleep. When I done woke up, there was water and there was fish nibbling at me. Fish? Well, I think it was fish. Couldn't see them none, but I felt things swimming around my legs. They didn't bite me none or nothing, but I could tell they was there. Fish. Now that was interesting. Bubba, do you think the fish are still there? He said he thought they probably were. I felt around for the flashlight and went to take a look. I couldn't see anything by the edge of the water, so I waded deeper into the underground pond and deeper until I was waist deep almost to the far wall. I shone the light as far as I could down into the water, and then I saw them. Blessed little things they were. I don't fish, so I don't know a whole lot about them. I didn't even know what kind of fish they were, except I knew they were the right kind. I knew they were the right kind because they had eyes. Okay, I've got a plan, I told Bubba after I'd splashed back over to him. I was so excited I could hardly breathe. Not that I could breathe all that well to begin with anyway, but now I was having some real trouble. Those fish are from the Cumberland River, and I know this because cavefish don't have eyes. They don't need them in the dark so they don't have them. I'd learned this interesting tidbit during my foray into junkyard caving. Can you believe it, Bubba? Those fish have eyes! My theory was that it had rained almost constantly over the past few days and the water level in the Cumberland had risen enough to flood the outside entrance of the tunnel. The entrance had opened up to the riverbank. The fact that there were dams on the river to control flooding made me believe that they were very close to the entrance. If the water level in the river rose too much, someone would turn a crank somewhere and drop the level back down. So we've got to be close to the outside, I finished. You mean we're supposed to swim out of here through that there pond? Well, not exactly. I thought I'd leave you the flashlight, then I'll swim out and call Deputy Giles, and then we'll come back and get you. No, well, Bubba, no, don't leave me anything but that, please, please. He broke into hysterical sobbing and latched onto me tighter than a horsefly on a colt. Do you have any better ideas? I asked after he had settled down. If you go, I'm going with you. I considered that. If I went alone, there was a sizable chance that I'd drown. Even if I were healthy, the chances were very slim that I would make it. And if I drowned, then Bubba would surely die holed up in here. So why shouldn't he drown right along with me? Then, of course, there was a very remote possibility that we both find our way out. All right, I agreed. I'm not going to lie to you and say it's not dangerous, so you have to make up your own mind. If you go, you can't panic halfway there and decide to turn back. It's all or nothing, do or die. He looked at me for the first time, adult to adult. I'm in. In a way, I wished I had kept my mouth shut and forbidden him to go. He was so young, too young, but I could feel his determination as he straightened his shoulders, and I realized he had just made a man's decision. From here on out, I'd treat him like a man. We both waded to the center of the dark, cold pond, shining in the faded light and feeling with our feet for an opening, however small. But after precious minutes of searching, we found nothing. Let's feel around the walls, said Bubba. He went left and I right, and at the far corner, I felt a small gap with my foot. I probed deeper and felt no resistance. I found it, I called. The opening was at the base of the floor where it met the wall. I could tell the opening was narrow, not more than 3 feet wide, but it sloped down gradually and was just wide enough for Colonel Sam's boxes of supplies and for us. Let's do it this way, Bubba said. Let me go first. Even though I'm kind of tubby, I'm still smaller than you are. You grab my ankle with your good arm, and then you kick hard with your legs. They're strong from riding, and I'll pull with my arms. They're strong from batting things around, and you only got one arm, so we'll go faster this way. But I think you need to know, get rid of some of them clothes you got on, or you'll drag us both down. And someone had said Bubba wasn't bright. Bubba helped me get rid of boots, socks, and sweats. The top part was complicated because of all the bandages, so we left it alone. Just in case Bubba was wearing only his t-shirt and I clad only in panties, tank tops, and bandages, joined hands, and we said a prayer. I don't recall now exactly what we prayed for, but it had something to do with the ensuring of our safety and barring that, us being instantly teleported to heaven. That last part was Bubba's. We agreed to keep our eyes open and turn back if we hadn't gotten out by the time we counted to 50. It was tough, but after wishing each other good luck, we stood near the hole, took 3 long, slow, deep breaths, and then we dived.